This is Fronteras, a changing America. I'm Fred Martino. A New Mexico dreamer, who's also the state's Teacher of the Year, accompanied a U.S. senator to President Donald Trump's State of the Union. Yvonne Orozco Acosta continues to push for a permanent solution to the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, or DACA. Ros Brown reports.
Orozco Acosta graduated from the University of New Mexico and has been a teacher for the past 4 years. She is hopeful that President Donald Trump and Congress will follow through on sparing dreamers from deportation so she can keep teaching.
I have a responsibility to return and give back to my community, and the only way that I can do that is through having legal protections, and there's just such an urgency for this issue. There's always a fear for me, you know, waking up in the morning with a lot of uncertainty. You know, it is scary times right now.
Trump says if dreamers receive an education, meet work requirements, and show good moral character, they could become U.S. citizens in 12 years. Orozco Acosta was born and raised in Mexico until she was 12 years old, when her family immigrated to the United States. She believes most DACA recipients have shown they deserve U.S. citizenship.
DACA is a merit-based program. Not everyone gets in. There was an extensive background check. You know, these are people that are not asking for handouts. We have done the work, and we deserve a solution.
Trump has said a DACA solution is possible, but only if a long-promised border wall with Mexico is built. Orozco Acosta wonders if people who support the wall really understand what that means.
I think people think of this wall being somewhere where there is nothing there, but the reality is that there are communities, people that live there, that would really disrupt their lives. And so I think people need to look at the bigger picture.
Orozco Acosta was recently named New Mexico's 2018 Teacher of the Year. This is Ros Brown, New Mexico News Connection.
Once again, supporters of early childhood education did not get the funding they were hoping for from the New Mexico legislature. Victor Onimole reports.
Some House lawmakers wanted to use more money from the state's land-grant permanent fund for things like pre-K, child care assistance, and other programs. But Democratic State Senator John Arthur Smith says that's a bad idea.
We're not like Congress. We cannot run a deficit. We have to have a balanced budget, and we have to have a reliable revenue stream. The land grant fund gives us a reliable revenue stream.
Smith says New Mexico needs quality programs for kids, but using more land grant money could jeopardize the state in the future. Almost $1 billion of the fund is already budgeted for public education each year. But that's not enough to fund early education for all the children who are eligible in the state. For KUNM, I'm Victor Onimole.
An Albuquerque police officer was honored during the State of the Union address. While on duty, he met a woman who was addicted to heroin and adopted her baby. More and more pregnant women are struggling with addiction in the state. But as Marisa DeMarco reports, attitudes can be harsh, services limited, and funding tight, leaving people with nowhere to turn.
When Albuquerque Police Department Officer Ryan Holitz found a couple shooting up behind a convenience store last year and noticed the woman was pretty far along in her pregnancy, he was catching a glimpse of a much larger and more systemic problem in the state. Jade Sanchez knows all about it. Years ago, she was in that same hard spot, pregnant and addicted and looking for help.
People are like, don't drink caffeine and soda and things like that while you're pregnant. You can imagine people think of somebody who's strung out on heroin, you know, and it's a daily habit. It definitely doesn't motivate somebody to change or try and help them to get out of that position for sure.
There are other complicating factors, too. Physical symptoms of withdrawal that are miserable and dangerous for both the mother and the baby, for one. Plus, Sanchez adds, there's a high likelihood that you're experiencing homelessness or in an unsafe living situation. And if you're in a relationship, she says, it's probably not the healthiest one. But the hardest part for her was the shame.
As a woman and as a mother, it's this just natural feeling in you to want to care for your unborn child. And when you know that you can't, you're not doing that to the best of your ability, it can be heartbreaking and really, really hard to deal with.
After running up against judgment and humiliation while seeking services, Sanchez found the Milagro Clinic in Albuquerque, which helps pregnant women detox safely. She gave birth to her son.
I still feel like it was just a miracle. I was so proud of myself. Not many people get to make it out of that, And so that's why it's kind of like my mission now.
She found a sanctuary at the Amity Foundation, a therapeutic community for women, where she works now as an intensive case manager helping other women. And she received long-term care for herself and her child at the Focus Program at the University of New Mexico. That's where she met Dr. Andrew Shi, a professor of pediatrics.
The needs of women who have substance use disorders, I think, are quite different often than men, and most of the treatment models are built on male model theories.
He's been working on this a long time. He helped found that Milagro Clinic back in 1989.
The first and biggest thing the state needs is a general commitment to the idea that treatment can be very helpful for people with a substance use disorder, whether it's methamphetamines or opioids or other substances.
The number of babies born addicted to drugs is rising all over New Mexico, and the rate has nearly doubled since 2011, according to Department of Health data. But Dr. Shi says the stats probably underestimate the problem.
The rise in babies with neonatal opioid withdrawal syndrome in part has to do with how much opioid drugs are in the community. And I think increasing awareness by providers about the severity of illness that babies can have when they go through withdrawal.
Dr. Shi says everyone needs to get on the same page. Obstetricians, family medicine doctors, nurses, midwives. He says the care for women with substance abuse disorders should be standardized throughout the state. And that could help prevent some of that poor treatment Sanchez described. Micaela Cadena is the research director with Young Women United.
They're often told, you must love your drugs more than your kids, or if you loved your kids, you would simply stop using.
Cadena says it's easy to ask, why don't women just get help?
But the thing is, we understand, and many know, addiction is a disease, and that without access and real access to healthcare and treatment, that we are forgetting too many of these New Mexican families, and that this is something that happens every day on the regular.
In New Mexico, there aren't that many places to go for detox and rehab if you're pregnant. The limited programs are overburdened and overwhelmed, Cadena says. Those facilities are in bigger cities despite the rural nature of our state. And Cadena adds, there's no inpatient residential center where women can bring their other children.
It's time to do something about it.
Jade Sanchez, the mom who made it through this already, has two recommendations for New Mexico if we want to see fewer situations like the one Officer Holitz walked into. Drop the stigma and create more treatment options for women. For KUNM, I'm Marisa DeMarco.
Recently, Temple Beth El in Las Cruces hosted an event featuring a recording of a speech presented by Martin Luther King Jr. in 1961. Commentator Peter Goodman says King's words still resonate today, a warning that this commentary does include offensive language used in historical context.
Too often, we find ourselves living in monologue rather than dialogue. That aptly describes 2018, but Martin Luther King said that on March 12, 1961. Recently, a bunch of us gathered to listen to the recorded speech. Listening, I thought about March 1961, 6 weeks after Jack Kennedy's inauguration, 5 years before Texas Western, now UTEP, shocked the world by winning the NCAA basketball championship, starting five Negro players and upsetting racist-run Kentucky. 1961, a Kenyan graduate student got his white girlfriend pregnant. They married in February in Hawaii. Their son would be born in August. No one imagined he'd someday be president. Hell, in 23 states they could have been arrested and jailed just for marrying. King discusses whether there's been real progress in race relations. Extreme optimists point to marvelous strides and conclude, quote, we can sit down now comfortably by the wayside and wait, unquote, for the inevitable equality. Extreme pessimists call those strides minor, see the Klan gaining strength, and conclude there's been no real progress and can be none. King combines the truths of those views while avoiding extremes. He says, we have come a long, long way, but also says we have a long, long way to go. He says, quote, We have broken loose from the Egypt of slavery, and we have moved through the wilderness of segregation, and now we stand on the border of the promised land of integration. Now the great challenge facing the nation is to move on. I recall those times. I recall news photos of neatly dressed young black men sitting in at segregated lunch counters. Nonviolently, they integrated lunch counters in scores of southern cities. Even in my northern high school, Italians and blacks were at odds, violently sometimes. In 1964, when a white girl dated a black boy, the principal called her parents to make sure they knew. That angered a few of us. In 1965, just back from going south in the civil rights movement, I was drinking beers with our softball team. A black man briefly came into the bar to buy cigarettes, and one of my teammates muttered, "nigger," under his breath. When I spoke up, I nearly got attacked by my own teammates. March 1961 was a pause along a steep mountain path with a lot of switchbacks and the usual mix of grand aha views and weariness. Are we there yet? No, but we have made even greater strides. Integration is assumed, but equality is still somewhere around the bend. Our racist president is a speed bump. Someday people will wonder why anyone fussed about color. But today, as in March 1961, that's a future we cannot assume, but must struggle for.
Peter Goodman's opinions are his own and do not necessarily represent the views of KRWG or NMSU.
Welcome to Puentes a la Comunidad, Bridges to the Community. Hello, I'm your host, Emily Guerra. My guest on this edition is Dean of New Mexico State University's William Conroy Honors College, Dr. Miriam Shaken, to talk to us about the Big Read Project in Las Cruces. Thank you for joining me on Puentes.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. How long have you been at NMSU?
I came to Las Cruces in January 2009, and I've been Dean of the Honors College since August 2014.
Were you teaching?
I was teaching in the Anthropology Department and Department Head for Anthropology.
What is the Big Read Project, and when was the last time it was in Las Cruces?
The Big Read is a program that's sponsored by the National Endowment for the Arts, and every year they select 20 or 30 books, and if you're interested in sponsoring a Big Read event, you write a proposal the year before and ask for funding from NEA to sponsor events surrounding the book that you choose. So we chose the book Into the Beautiful North by Luis Urrea, and it was chosen by a panel of faculty and staff who we read reviews of some of the books, we read excerpts from some of the books, and we decided this was the best fit for what we were all about here in the Borderlands region. And we did this in part to build on a couple of events that we've had for a long time in the community. Every spring, the university has sponsored a spring speaker series that's this year going to be on March 13th at the Center for the Arts. And we decided to build on that. Plus, we had also instituted last year something called the Common Reading Program, where we try to get, especially first-year students, all reading and talking about a book in common. So the NEA provided us an opportunity to just really build this into a community-wide series of events instead of it being something just for students on the campus. We had an NEA-sponsored event some years ago, I think 7 or 8 years ago, when they brought they used the book Bless Mi Ultima by Rodolfo Anaya, which is another lovely, lovely book. And this year we've chosen Urrea's book, which deals with themes that are very much appropriate for the Borderlands region.
So it's been 7 years.
I think it's been about that, at least that, yes. It's a lot of work to apply for the grant. It's a lot of work to organize all of the events. So it's not something you'd undertake lightly.
So there's a lot of events scheduled for the Big Read.
Yes.
The kickoff event is going to be at the Las Cruces Plaza on Saturday, February 24th at 11 o'clock in the morning.
That's correct. The book deals with the story of a group of children, teenagers, in a small town in Mexico, and they're very upset because there are a lot of bad things happening in their community. Most of the adult men are living and working in the United States, and so the village is left without much for them to do, and they're dealing with the growing influence of the drug cartels. So the one thing the kids have in common is that they love going to the movies, and they go to see the movie Magnificent Seven, the 1960 version with Yul Brynner. And they decide they're going to come into the United States and find seven good men to save their town from the bad guys. So the first event we're going to be having builds on this cultural similarities between the northern and southern part of the U.S.-Mexico border. So we're going to be celebrating kids, and the Alma de Arte Charter School dance companies will be performing, and we'll also have the mariachi band from the Centennial High School, as well as another group of adult ballet folklorico dancers at 11 o'clock on the plaza in downtown Las Cruces. And this coincides with the farmers market, so we think it'll be a very fun and lively event. We'll also be distributing some free copies of the book at that event. And then that evening at 7 p.m. at the Rio Grande Theater, we're screening the film Magnificent Seven, the original 1960 version. And many of us have seen the movie on a television, but it's quite another thing to see it on the big screen. And this is also free to the public. All of the events for the Big Read will be free to the public.
And how many people are you expecting to attend?
I'm guessing we'll have a couple of hundred at least at each of the events that we're going to be sponsoring. Some of them will probably be much more. The culminating event is Urrea's keynote talk on March 13th at the ASNMSU Center for the Arts, and that will be at 7:30 p.m. That theater holds, I think, about 450 people, and in previous years it's always been full, so I anticipate that to be the case as well this time around.
So you're going to have a couple of screenings of films.
Yes.
To begin with, Saturday, February 24th at the historic Rio Grande Theater at 7 p.m. will be the screening of The Magnificent Seven, and then on March the 9th at the Rio Grande, it's going to be Akira Kurosawa's Seventh Samurai. How is this close to The Magnificent Seven?
Well, Kurosawa was a Japanese filmmaker, and he loved Western movies, and he was influenced by Western movies, and he made a very famous film called Seven Samurai, which is basically the same story as Magnificent Seven. And so the Japanese film was made first, and then an American filmmaker made the American version set in the U.S. West and called it Magnificent Seven. So it's really the same theme that's been woven through many different media throughout many different decades. So we'll be showing both The Magnificent Seven on February 24th and the Kurosawa film on March 9th, which also coincides with the weekend of the Las Cruces International Film Festival. And this will be an event that's free to the public, but also free to those that are attending the film festival.
Then you'll have a lot of panel discussions about the walls, on the border, detention, the relationship between U.S. and Mexico.
The main event will be on March 1st at 4 p.m., held at the Brannigan Cultural Center. And Professor Nancy Oretzkin, who is an attorney but also a faculty member here at NMSU, she has been working for a long time doing pro bono work on the issue of the people who are detained in facilities close to the border because they come across the border without proper documentation. And so she's worked with several other attorneys who've worked on these cases of detention clients, and they're going to talk about their experiences and the whole challenge we have with balancing border security and human rights. So that will be on March 1st at the Brannigan Cultural Center. And then after Urrea's in town, the annual J. Paul Taylor Social Justice Symposium will be held on March 15th, and there will be more publicity coming out about that in a few weeks, but there'll be a whole series of discussions and panels that deal with borders and immigration and related issues.
You've selected the book Into the Beautiful North by Luis Urrea, and you said that that was because it was very similar to what's going on the border and this area.
I think it's a very human story. It's really about trying to overcome challenges, but because it's dealing with crossing the border illegally by these teenagers, they have encounters with border Patrol and ICE agents. They have encounters with coyotes who are trying to take advantage of them. And on both the Mexican side and the U.S. side, they meet some really, really good guys and some really bad guys. And interestingly, there's no one-size-fits-all characterization. It's really a very nuanced understanding of the complex issues that all of these agencies and individuals have to balance in living in the borderland. I think one of the things that I liked about it is there's some parts of the story that are laugh out loud funny, and there's other parts that are very sad and very moving, but that's what I think makes it a really good tale.
And since you've been here in the Las Cruces area since 2009, have you seen a lot or have you encountered a lot of students that have come close to this type of reality?
I know that we're having a lot of conversations here at the university, for example, about the students who are currently under DACA status and what's going to happen to them unless we can get this issue resolved and they have some kind of permanent resolution to their legal status. It's something that I think concerns all of us who live in this region, but for those of us at the university, it concerns us especially because we have some very fine young students who are affected by this legal and political limbo that they're living in.
What question comes to mind a lot about DACA? This is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And do people understand what that means?
I think many of us don't. I think we hear rhetoric about, you know, these are all bad people. But in fact, in order to get a DACA status, the students, the young people who want to have this protection, have to pay a lot of money to get this. They have to go through legal background checks, like an FBI check, to show that they have absolutely zero criminal record. And so in some ways, they're the most squeaky clean folks we can ask for who are joining our community and just trying to get an education and be productive.
I've heard people ask, why didn't they go through the regular channels?
Well, in many cases, and I know this to be true for one of the graduate students that I'm currently working with, she came here as a very little girl. She was brought by her parents. And so she's only ever really known from before she was even in elementary school, she's only ever known living in the United States. So she's as American as every other kid who lives on her block. She just doesn't happen to have the same legal documentation.
So this Big Read project is going to bring a lot of awareness to this community and to people who aren't aware of some of the things that they have to go through.
Yeah, I think that it might. I think that it helps us understand that these are all just people who are trying to make their lives a little bit better. The children in the story, the teenagers in the story, face the challenges of trying to make their community a happier and safer and better place, just like all of us here want for our children to have them live in a happy, safe, and a better world than what we all inherited.
Well, I really appreciate you coming down to talk to us about the Big Read Project, explaining a little bit more as to what it is, and it's been 7 years since it's been in Las Cruces.
Well, it's high time for it to return. And if anyone wanted to find out more information about the events, the Honors College website has on its front page a button you can click, and you can learn all about all of the Big Reads events, the times, the locations, who's involved, and so on. And that's available at honors.nmsu.edu.
Thank you again, Dr. Miriam Shaken from the Williams Conroy Honors College here at NMSU.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. For KRWG, I'm Emily Guerra.
That's Fronteras for this week. I'm Fred Martino. Stay with us. Images is next. In depth, a conversation with Congresswoman Michelle Lujan Grisham, who's seeking the Democratic nomination for New Mexico governor.